Good afternoon. It is exciting to see so many of you out here today to talk about physical activity, and I have the fun topic of gaming. So usually, even if you're not familiar with the research on gaming, you might have a child or you yourself might play video games every now and then. So I'll concentrate on exergaming, but also mention some of the predictors that we found in our intervention that predicted whether or not the adolescents we worked with lost weight. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. Everyone in this room is aware that pediatric obesity rates have climbed dramatically. You've probably all seen this chart showing the increase. Now 17% of our nation's youth are obese and 32% are overweight. And throughout the country and around the world, we're seeing high rates of pediatric obesity, and especially concentrated in the Southeast region. I'll be focusing on an intervention that we conducted right here in Washington, D.C., and D.C. does have one of the highest rates of pediatric obesity in the country. We also know that obesity rates have increased for every major racial and ethnic category of children and adolescents. You can see here for adolescent males, for non-Hispanic white, non-Hispanic black, and Mexican-American males, obesity rates have increased. And then for adolescent females, you see a particular increase for African-American adolescent females. So obese youth face several very significant challenges in multiple different developmental domains. Of course, we know that physical health, obese youth are at a higher risk for type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular problems. Only 15% of our youth right now are meeting the recommendations of an hour of moderate to vigorous physical activity every day of the week. And if we look at obese youth, that number is even lower. We also know that teenagers love to hang out with their friends, and in fact, peer influence during adolescence is very important for adolescent development. Unfortunately, we've seen that obese youth tend to have low levels of self-esteem and low levels of friendship quality or peer support. So there's this potential here for exergame interventions. Exergames are video games like the Nintendo Wii, Dance Dance Revolution, Kinect, and so on, that involve physical activity or gross motor movement. These might actually be sustainable for physical activity, or perhaps they might be a gateway to inspire children to become more physically active. And in particular, they may be useful in disadvantaged communities who do not have sports facilities, sports equipment, also in high crime neighborhoods where it's not safe for children to go out and play on the street. And then there are other issues such as inclement weather where exergames might be useful to have a little bit of active indoor play when outdoor play isn't possible. And there is building evidence for exergames. We know that exergames can produce levels of light to moderate energy expenditure and increase heart rate to reach levels needed for cardiorespiratory fitness. In fact, Norway considers exergames one of their national sports, and the recently released compendium of physical activities included exergames as one of the physical activities. So the metabolic equivalent tends to be between 3 and 6, so it qualifies as moderate intensity physical activity. And some of the research we have done also shows that when playing exergames with a peer in a social context, adolescents expend more calories than they do when playing alone. And because of the social context, then there might be some positive psychological outcomes related to increased self-esteem and increased social bonding. So our question is, can we create an exergame intervention during a school year for adolescents? And when working with overweight and obese adolescents, can this actually produce weight loss or healthy weight maintenance? We're looking particularly at the social context of cooperative versus competitive exergame play. And also I'm going to discuss some effects of peer support on an adolescent's ability to lose weight. So we initially recruited about 100 adolescents to participate in our exergame intervention, and we ended up with 54 that stuck with it for the entire 20 weeks, which if you're familiar with physical activity interventions for youth, this is actually not a bad attrition rate. And most of our adolescents were considered overweight or obese according to BMI percentile. We randomly assigned participants into one of three conditions. There were two exergame conditions, a cooperative and a competitive condition. These participants met either during lunch or after school every day. They were encouraged to come every day. and played the Nintendo Wii EA Sports Active game. We pre-assigned these games, so we were the ones that decided which games they would play. This is kind of a circuit workout. If you're not familiar, it includes sports games, upper and lower body strengthening games, flexibility, also cardio, such as jogging in place. And then the control condition just went about their regular daily activities, because we wanted to see what happens to obese youth when we don't intervene, when we're not introducing any kind of physical activity intervention, versus what would happen if we convince these youth to actually do this extra game intervention over about 20 weeks. So the way we designed the cooperative versus competitive condition, every time the youth came in, they played with or against a partner, and that partner would change each day. In the cooperative condition, the goal was to work together with your partner to expend calories and to earn points together. And then there was this little bit of element of competition where we ranked the teams against other teams each day and each week. And then the competitive condition was truly competitive. They, again, always played with a partner, but they were individually trying to expend calories and earn points. And then we would rank them individually each day and each week. Here are just a couple of pictures of the adolescents playing the game. So this is an example of some of the jogging in place games. But you can see there is quite a level of moderate intensity physical activity involved. I'm going to focus today on our independent variable of weight. Because these were all obese adolescents, we had a pediatrician on our staff, and they all did need to lose weight in order to reach a healthy weight. These are 15 to 19-year-olds, so some of them are considered to be young adults or late adolescents. We also measured peer support. We measured exercise self-efficacy and self-esteem. Because we had three data points in each adolescent, we were able to use growth curve analysis. So we created individual growth curve trajectories of weight change over time. This allowed us to look at some of the baseline predictors and also to compare our condition effects and see what the effect of weight change was during the intervention. Okay, so these are the main results for weight change. First you see here, to compare all three conditions, we compared the cooperative and competitive conditions versus the control. We're also able to compare the competitive versus cooperative conditions. So this is just the statistical analytic technique. So first, one of the most exciting findings is that we saw there was a difference in the rate of weight change between the cooperative and the control conditions. Specifically, those adolescents in the cooperative condition lost weight, whereas those in the control condition did not lose weight. And I'll show you in a moment the specifics on that. We did not see any other condition differences. Also, we found a marginal relationship with peer support. So those adolescents who came in with higher levels of peer support were marginally more likely to lose weight during the intervention, regardless of what condition they were in. Also, this has been shown in other research, but adolescents who came in with higher self-esteem weighed less than those who had lower self-esteem. So we're starting to see this relationship between self-esteem and weight. And also we see that our males weighed more than our females did, but males and females did not have a different rate of change in weight. So this shows you in kilograms, but I'll describe it in pounds, that the control condition on average gained about 2 pounds. The competitive condition on average neither lost nor gained weight. Then the cooperative condition, on average, lost about 3.5 pounds. So in the end, there was about a 5-pound difference in the mean weight change between the cooperative condition and the control condition. And also, just as another interesting finding, we measured peer support both at baseline but also at the end. We found that those participants involved in the extra game conditions increased in peer support and self-report peer support, whereas the control condition actually decreased in peer support. And this does... You can find studies that show that over a school year, obese youth's peer support tends to decrease over time. And yet, in the extra game conditions, we're seeing an increase. So in summary, the cooperative extra game players actually lost weight from the intervention, whereas the other two groups did not. And participants with higher peer support marginally lost more weight. Since we are at a conference, I'm able to share some of the lessons learned, which might be useful for you if you're interested in, if you already do physical activity interventions, you probably know a lot of these things. But these are the things that don't always make it to the journal articles because there's not enough space. But I really want to share some of these. And they mostly have to do with obstacles that we faced. So this is just in recruiting participants to join our intervention and also in retaining participants over the year. So these participants elected into the program. It was during lunch or after school when most kids are socializing with friends and have many other priorities going on. So we faced many different obstacles, including the environmental obstacles. We ran this study 2 years ago, and if you'll remember, in DC we had record snowstorms, snowfall. So twice during our intervention, the kids' school was canceled for a week at a time. So not only did we lose those weeks of the intervention, it was also very hard to get the participants to come back after that week. We saw the same thing for the winter holiday break. Anytime they had a holiday, convincing them to come back to the intervention was very difficult. We were working in a very high crime and impoverished area. So we had frequent fire alarms, many of which were pranks, but some were for legitimate fires that were started at the school. We had a carjacking experience on school property that we had to deal with the safety issues from that for our research staff as well as for the students themselves. Daylight savings time meant that when our kids or our participants were finishing the intervention, oftentimes taking public transportation or walking home, they were having to do so in the dark, which obviously is quite dangerous. There are also some school obstacles. Since we're working in a public school system, there are a lot of different layers that you have to work through, and we started a year in advance filling out all the paperwork and everything. And it was a continuous process. Even during our intervention, we had to continue reporting on the results and making sure that we had the buy-in from all of the important people involved. The school had other activities that kind of drew the students in, and some were very productive activities for them, like tutoring sessions. But trying to convince the youth that this gaming club, we did not call it a weight loss club or a physical activity club. So trying to convince them to come to that club over other priorities was very difficult. Just another kind of school obstacle was they kept the bathrooms locked throughout the school day and after the school day. So especially for our female participants who wanted to change clothes to participate in our intervention, they would have to go find a security officer who would have to go unlock the bathroom door before they could come to the intervention. So that's just one of a few different examples. We found that it's very important to get the school buy-in. We worked through a school-based wellness center, so it did not appear as if we were outsiders coming in, which helped a lot. And, you know, we had to make sure we had the principal buy-in and the teacher buy-in and so on. And then that doesn't even begin to talk about some of the individual obstacles. You know, just the apathy and lack of motivation of the adolescents, the many other responsibilities that these adolescents had, after-school jobs, family responsibilities, and so on. And we also noticed some compensatory behaviors, especially the lunchtime program when the kids were working out and then immediately eating lunch. We heard them say comments like, oh, well, I was just physically active for 30 minutes, but now I'm going to eat this big piece of pizza. So they realized what they were doing, that they were putting the calories right back in. But they didn't, they still did it. They still consumed the high-fat, high-calorie foods. And then just very quickly, because I believe I'm running short on time, it took a lot of retention effort. We maintained constant contact with the participants, text messages, emails, phone calls, whatever worked. We tried to make it as fun as possible, getting participant input on the games that were played, the music that was played, and so on. And we did have some external rewards. We gave them some monetary compensation, although we discovered that the participants who joined for the monetary compensation, it was not sufficient to keep them in. We did have daily healthy snacks and so on. And so the reason I'm sharing all of this is the gaming intervention was successful, but it did take a lot of resources and a lot of work. But it was exciting to see that these youth who were obese and who were not involved in physical activity, who were largely sedentary, they seemed to get excited about the game. And they were able to play these sports that other ways they may have never tried, even basketball, tennis, and so on. So it was a really exciting opportunity to see in action what it takes to get a youth to actually be physically active on a daily basis, and what some of these opportunities are for these gaming interventions to get kids to be excited about physical activity. And so that's my conclusion. And just to wrap up, I'd like to acknowledge the research assistants, the staff at the school-based health clinic, and we are also fortunate to get funding from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for this. So thank you, and I'd love to have any questions you might have. And then if you'd like to contact me afterwards, feel free to send me an email. Thank you. Yes?
I had a question about your extra gaming groups. Were they paired based on the same sex, or were there mixed sex groups, or how did that work?
The partner changed every day, and we mixed it up whether it was same sex or different sex. And there's different research showing, especially for this age range, that perhaps if we had kept them all the same sex, we may have found different results. But we did. We didn't want that to be a factor, so we rotated partners.
Did you monitor their diet in terms of the controlled, competitive, and the corporate groups? And did their diet change throughout the intervention?
We did. They filled out just a simple food diary. And based on that, we did not see changes throughout the intervention. Now, they also reported on physical activity and sports involvement total. And we did find that the extra game participants reported higher levels of sports involvement. Now, we don't know if that's because they were considering the we to be the sports, or if they're actually going out and being more physically active. I think with this sort of weight loss, we might guess that they were becoming more physically active outside of the gameplay. Yes?
The cooperative thing is especially fascinating. I don't know if you know about a thing called the good behavior game, but there's an intervention with first graders, and it's been used by school students, where you simply divide the class in two and have them each behave well. And the peer pressure to be first in line, to line up for recess, or to get other little token rewards. Find that these kids have lower problems with behavior at sixth grade, and they have less, like half as much hard drug use at age 19. So the concept of getting kids to compete, to work together, but also to compete against another team, seems to be a very strong way to motivate.
Yeah, that's really why we wanted to set up this cooperative versus competitive. And our thinking is that, especially among these youth who are not traditionally involved in sports activities or not being physically active, having that partner, even though the partner changed every day, working together as a team seemed to really motivate them. And they came and they were more active, whereas the individual competition may have been too much and may have ended up being a deterrent, especially if they were not the ones that continued to win and excel. At least if they have a partner and you're mixing up skill levels, they were more likely to win, you know, throughout the intervention. So I think there is something really important there.
You also mentioned BMI, which a lot of people who work on this stuff, Tony McDonald, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I have time for maybe one more question. Well, it's my party. I guess I can ask. do you have any? I'm trying to think of a mechanism for why that happened. So, was there differences in? You discussed moderate to vigorous physical activity. Did you have any external way to quantify the intensity of physical activity or the time spent in?
We did. We used accelerometry, and we used ActiCal accelerometers, and we did not see a difference between the cooperative or competitive conditions. We basically thought of everything that we could think of that might explain the differences. Even attendance, there was a difference in average attendance, but it wasn't significant, so it could have been our sample size. But I think that the increase in sports involvement that I didn't mention this, the cooperative players reported more sports involvement than the competitive players did. So I think what we're seeing is this gateway that they were becoming more active outside of the gameplay. So any measure we would have done within the gameplay may not have captured the difference. All right, well, thank you.
Thank you.